Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q1 FY23 earnings conference call of Gland Pharma Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sumanta Bajpayee, Vice President, Corporate Finance and Investor Relations. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good evening and warm welcome to Gland Pharma's earnings conference call for first quarter of financial year 2023. I have with me Mr. Srinivas Sadu, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Ravishekhar Mitra, Chief Financial Officer, to discuss the business performance and to answer queries during the call. We will begin the call with the business highlights and overview by Mr. Sadu, followed by financial overview by Mr. Mitra. After the opening remarks from the management, operator will open the bridge for Q&A session. Before we proceed with the call, please note some of the statement made in today's discussion may be forward-looking and based on management estimates, and this must be viewed in conjunction with market risk uncertainties involved in our business. The safe harbor language contained in the press release also pertains to this conference call. This call is being recorded and the playback shall be made available on our website shortly after the call. The transcript of this call will be submitted to the stock exchanges and made available on our website as well. I will now hand the call over to Mr. Sadu for his opening remarks. Thank you all. Over to Mr. Sadu.
Thank you, Sumanta. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining our earnings call for the first quarter of fiscal 2023. My best wishes to all our shareholders, analysts, and their families. I must say it is a tough start to FY23 with few supply chain issues which were ongoing for the last couple of quarters hit us hard on our quarterly dispatches. We faced delay in receipt of APIs and primary packing materials, which caused delay in production. We are making all efforts possible to minimize the impact of these disruptions by qualifying new suppliers as well as optimizing our production planning. We lost productivity during the quarter on account of delays in material supply. At our Dindigul facility, we lost nearly 70%-80% of our available production capacity of lyo and liquid vials during the quarter owing to supply chain disruption, but we should be able to go back to normal utilization levels from next quarter. In spite of the ongoing supply side disruption, we ensured the new product launches were not impacted during the quarter, which are key to our business growth. We also initiated cost optimization and productivity initiatives, as part of which two lines at our Dindigul facility were shut down during the quarter to make the modifications for mitigation of production bottleneck, thereby improving production output. Both lines became operational from July, and the lost production will be covered in the next three quarters on account of improved productivity. We closed this quarter Q1 FY23 with a revenue of ₹8,569 million as against ₹11,539 million in Q1 FY22, and our PAT stood at ₹2,292 million for the quarter against ₹3,507 million in Q1 FY22. We have generated ₹3,328 million of cash flow from operations in Q1 FY23. We continue to make progress on our key focus areas to build a differentiated portfolio along with expanding geographic penetration. We continue to make investments in R&D and were able to complete six ANDA filings during Q1 FY23 in line with our plan. The progress on the complex portfolio also is in line with expectation. We have also finalized next set of products for filings in the China market upon detailed assessment of our parent, Fosun Pharma, and with this, we are confident of building a robust portfolio for the China market. The addressable market size for the next set of products in the China market is $1 billion. We ensured timely new product launches and managed to launch 14 product SKUs during this quarter. To highlight a few, we commercialized products including bortezomib, pemetrexed, pantoprazole, and sanecobalamin in the U.S. market. We were granted 180 days CGT exclusivity for zinc sulfate injection in the US market from its first commercial marketing date of 27 June 2022. We also launched other products including bortezomib in Australia and oxaliplatin in the Canadian market. During Q1 FY23, upon excluding capital R&D expenditure, the R&D expenditure stands at 4.1% of our revenue for the period, in line with our historical trend. As on 30th June 2022, we along with our partners have 316 ANDA filings in the US and 1567 product registrations globally. We are recruiting talent to further strengthen our capabilities in biosimilar manufacturing and complex development. We are experiencing increased attrition and hence are ensuring we build enough resources, keeping in mind anticipated growth initiatives of the company. Let me summarize our performance across various geographies. Our rest of the world markets accounted for 12% of our Q1 FY23 revenue for the quarter, as against 19% in Q1 FY22. The delay in material supplies has hit our ability to take up rest of the world orders with low delivery times. The good aspect is that the demand stays strong. We are working on ensuring we can build inventory to meet the demand for our rest of the world portfolio. We anticipate another quarter for us to go back to normalized levels of inventory for this market. Our key markets continue to remain MENA, LATAM and APAC. We registered our products ethacrenate sodium, ganciclovir, foscarnet sodium and labetalol hydrochloride in new geographies during the quarter. Our core markets, namely US, Canada, Europe and Australia, remained strong during the year despite market challenges. Our core markets accounted for 82% of our revenue during Q1 FY23 as against 65% during Q1 FY22. We continue to maintain our new launch momentum in our core markets. There is visible price pressure in the US which is impacting profitability for certain products, but as our new launches scale up, the impact will normalize. The quarter was impacted by shortage of API and primary packing materials, which should relax over the next couple of quarters. We remain confident of a launch pipeline that will ensure sustainable growth in the market. The key products in the core markets contributing to the sales were enoxaparin sodium, ketorolac trimethamine and ertapenem. India market accounts for 6% of our Q1 FY23 revenue. The Indian market sales were impacted by shutdown of a dedicated insulin line during the quarter to accommodate line modifications. The demand for insulin remains strong and will cover the loss in production by improved productivity during the rest of the year. I would like to touch upon a little about our growth initiatives. The geographic growth, as has been seen from our performance, we have expanded our penetration in the rest of the world markets. China remains a key geographic focus and we expect to start receiving approval in the current year. On the portfolio front, we are progressing well on our complex injectable portfolio and have completed installation of manufacturing lines. We are also in the process of evaluating manufacturing lines for technologies involving microspheres and combi vials. On this front, we have made significant progress in building internal capabilities and are also exploring opportunities for external partnerships. And another key focus area remains biosimilar CDMO business, on which again we are seeing a lot of interest from our partners. With this, I wish everyone good health. I would like to now hand over the call to our CFO, Mr. Ravi Mitra, who will share details about our financial performance for the quarter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sagar. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for attending our first quarter earnings call. Our earnings presentation has been uploaded on the website. Let me begin with sharing the financial performance of first quarter of financial year 2022-23. Revenue from operations for the quarter 1 FY23 stood at ₹8,569 million, declined by 26% due to various reasons as explained by Mr. Sadhu in his opening remarks. But some of these are transient in nature, and we would like to reinstate that our differentiated business model remains robust with a focus on supplying quality products to our customers. In spite of the continued challenges in non-availability and delayed supply of critical materials, our efforts were to ensure that sufficient level of inventory remains available at our customers and in our core markets. Other income for the first quarter of financial year 2023 was ₹744 million, which includes foreign exchange gains on operations of ₹342 million and interest on fixed deposit of ₹376 million. Gross margin for Q1 FY23 was 56%, an improvement of 284 basis points as compared to Q1 FY22. High percentage of sales from regulated markets and favorable business model mix, along with focus on optimizing cost levers, have positively impacted the gross profit margin. We have reported an EBITDA of ₹3,443 million in Q1 FY23 and EBITDA margin of 37%. During the quarter, we have managed to maintain EBITDA margin in higher band of our earlier communicated target range. In Q1 FY23, we have witnessed increase in power and fuel cost by 53% year-on-year basis and 36% from last sequential quarter due to increased power tariff and oil and gas prices. During this quarter, we faced shortages of power resulting in increased purchase of power at higher tariff. The situation has normalized now and we expect the cost of power to come down. Manpower related costs have increased by 22% on year-on-year basis due to recruitment for the additional lines coming in and yearly salary increment impact. If you compare the staff costs on a sequential basis, it increased marginally due to increase in headcount. Our net profit for first quarter was ₹2,292 million and PAT margin of 25%. Effective tax rate was at 25.7% for the quarter. The total R&D expenses for first quarter were ₹410 million compared to ₹438 million of the same period previous financial year, which is decrease of 6% and stands at 4.8% of the revenue. Cash flow from operations for the first 3 months of current financial year was ₹3,329 million. Cash conversion cycle stood at 241 days for the quarter, same as first quarter of last year. In anticipation of business recovery for the rest of the financial year, we are building up our inventory and that is the reason for higher inventory and resultant higher payable days. Due to supply related issues, most of the sales during the quarter were back-ended and hence you see increase in receivable days, which we expect to regularize with normalization of business. Total capex incurred during the quarter was ₹414 million. Our ROCE on ex cash basis stood at 21% for Q1 FY23. The reduction is primarily due to substantial decrease of post-tax EBIT during the quarter. As on June 30th, 2022, we had total ₹37,892 million of cash and equivalents. We had evaluated a number of M&A targets in the recent past. Current market dynamics, making the valuation of a target assets more reasonable, has provided impetus to our goal of acquiring right strategic fit for a growth plan. With this, I would request the moderator to open the lines for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Tarang Agarwal from Old Bridge Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Good evening. Three questions from my end. First, if I look at each of your markets, business loss seems to be material. Would it be safe to presume that a significant proportion of business loss was owing to supply bottlenecks rather than, you know, changing front-end market environment? Because in your presentation and in your opening remarks, you've also alluded to price erosion in some markets, impact of a high base in the other markets. So just wanted to get some sense as to whether it's really on the demand side or it's on really the supply chain bottlenecks for each of your markets.
Yeah, primarily it's...
Okay, yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so primarily it's a supply chain issue, right? I mean, if you look at the three baskets, U.S., we are, if you look at the revenues, if you look at quarter on quarter, we still grow by about 4%. And year on year, it has de-grown by 4%, but then there's a timing issue of certain products. But I would say it's still a lot of products in the U.S. actually has grown substantially, right? And because of the syringe shortages, we have allocated most of our supplies what we got to the U.S. market to cater to the contracts what we got, like I mentioned last time. So we kind of didn't have enough syringes to supply to domestic and rest of the world market. So that has impacted sales in other markets. And from domestic perspective, you see two major issues. One, of course, the syringes what I just told. And the other is taking a shutdown of a couple of lines to increase the productivity. So that has contributed about 30-40 crores of loss of domestic sales. While there's a large base last year on the domestic, if you look at first quarter of last year, it's almost 180 crores, out of which about 70 crores was related to 70 to 80 crores was related to products like remdesivir and enoxa, which were COVID products. So if you remove that, still, we're still probably off by about 7-8 crores. But major impact, I would say, in domestic is because of the shortages of syringes and also the ROW business also because of this.
Okay. That's helpful, sir. Just a second follow-up. Sir, in the U.S., despite the kind of launches that you had in this quarter, growth has been nice, but one would have presumed that the sheer size of those products would translate into maybe better business. So is there a lot of heightened competition out there in the U.S., even in the supposed big products?
Yeah, so the competition is there, but if you look at the percentage-wise, the new product, the growth has contributed about 4% of the growth came from new products. But also, you need to see when the product got launched. Many product got launched in either May or June, so it's kind of not 100% recognized. That's one aspect. And also, while large products have some competition, there are also smaller products, 20-30 million products where the competition is not there, where we just mentioned zinc has the smaller product about 28 million, but still we have exclusivity for that. But you'll see more of that coming in the next few quarters. So that way, I think it's a combination of competition in some large molecules, not being able to recognize for the entire quarter because most of the launches happen mid of the quarter or end of this quarter.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dheeresh Pathak from White Oak Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. The profit share number for the quarter, if you can share, please.
Profit.
So it is about 10% of the revenue.
Okay. And the CapEx number looks low, so what is the guidance for the full year? And where are you spending the CapEx money this year?
Yeah, so CapEx full year guidance remains same, 300 crores what we told last time. So we are building up this microsphere combi line, as Mr. Sadu was talking about a little while ago, for our complex products, and that ordering and spending which should start soon. And first quarter was more of a timing thing. So we will end up at 300 crores. And other than that, complex injectables line in Pashamylaram, we are also adding more API capacity. And also one bag line we need to add because of the increased demand we have seen. So these are the large items where CapEx would go.
Thank you. And last question, in terms of the biologic CDMO, if you can share any further progress you've made from the last communication you had.
So there are four actually customers wins which has happened during the quarter, and we are discussing about the commercial terms, and you could just let so that's where the status is. So
But first revenue, when do we should we expect to see the first revenue hit the P&L?
Yeah, I think this is too early to comment at this point of time. So we have, like, just now we were discussing that we have seen a lot of traction and ongoing discussion with our parent also. So, but at this point of time, we would refrain from commenting at which particular month or quarter this revenue will start coming in. But we, capability-wise, team-wise, we are all ready, and that's why customers are coming and visiting us.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amechal K from Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. I have a few questions. First is, Mr. Sadhu, is it possible for you to quantify how much of the impact from the supply shortages and the plant shutdown is there in during this quarter, and how much of the sales loss is recoverable in the coming quarters?
So if you look at the market wise, I would say US, we lost, because of syringes, we lost about 20-25 crores. ROW, about 100 crores we lost. And domestic, we lost about 40 crores, I would say.
So,
and recovery wise, yeah, go ahead.
So even if we add these numbers, the total is still lower, right, from what the growth trajectory we were hoping to be on. So is there any also impact on the demand side of the business? That's what the second question.
So I would say not the demand side. You know, if you look at the timing, right, last year, if you see, micafungin is a big product. If you see, look at last year first quarter, almost 126 crores came from that product. Whereas, you know, this quarter we didn't supply anything on that. It's more of the inventory issue where the customer is liquidating it, and we don't want to supply more now. But if you look at the end market, the sales, what the customers, our partner is selling is consistent. So that will come back, you know, in a quarter or so. That's more of the timing issue, because last year they were, you know, normally our partners have those, you know, 3 to 6 months inventory. So because it's, our model is a little different, so that's what is happening. So it looked a little bulky last year, but that will come back in a quarter or so.
Sure. The second question is related to our PFS suppliers. So what I understand is that even these PFS suppliers are struggling to cope up the demand to provide. So even in coming next 1 year or so, what I understand, they would be operating at full capacity utilization. So what could be the way out for us? Is it if you have any thoughts on the same?
So for rest of the world, we're already qualifying other suppliers, because the US, still I think we have enough supplies commitments from the from BD. But we are qualifying a Chinese supplier as well as Italian supplier for rest of the world markets. So we're going to use those for this. So I think, you know, that can be mitigated by this.
Do you think that whatever growth expectation we have from our business, that would be fulfilled by these suppliers all, as well in the coming years, and there won't be any supply disruption?
Yeah, we're pretty confident, yes.
Sure. Just last question on the staff cost side, because the last quarter when I had asked the same question, I was told that there was some one-time item in the staff cost, and it was expected to normalize from this quarter onwards. However, rather it has gone up during this quarter. So if you can provide some guidance on the staff cost.
Yeah, so what we earlier referred was for one-time bonuses given off. But if you compare now with Q4, I think it's the incremental staff cost which has come is on account of additional headcount and normal yearly increment. But that impact is not that additional one-time bonus which we talked about earlier. That is now not there this quarter.
So should we assume this 98 crore to be a normalized base for the staff cost?
Yeah, that's correct.
Sure. Thank you so much. I will join back.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. One clarity on this India revenue. So this quarter we done about 51 crore. And if I look at the March quarter or the December quarter, we were doing very close to 200 crore. You talked about 40 crore impact from the supply disruption, right, from that insulin facility. So still trying to understand the decline from 200 crore to this 50 crore.
So if you see the last quarter, there was export restriction on enoxaparin product. So we were supplying a lot of domestic supplies to, you know, third parties. So so most of the revenue came, almost 100 crore revenue came from supplying to third parties, but with lower margins. And you know, we could supply with the different syringes. But, you know, if you look at the logistic cost, the import cost, and also the dollar, it's not making any sense, you know, to operate at the price levels that are there, which are under price control in India. So we didn't continue to supply to those because of the restriction last quarter we did that. But at least we had some margin that point of time. But this quarter, you know, because of the increased costs and also the dollar not helping us, because we had to pay duty for the import of materials. So we actually stayed away from those supplies.
So you're saying that that business largely is you're not taking up now. It's not that that business is getting booked in some other segment. That business itself we're not taking up now.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. So when things recover now, let's say 2Q or 3Q, so India business will be about 100 crore base, a quarter level?
Yeah. So on our own front end, B2C is around 60 crores, and then around 30 crores of insulin, 25-30 crores, 90, and another 10 crores of miscellaneous. Yeah, around 100 crores, correct.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Second question is just clarity on the R&D spend. So we annually, and we if I look at the revenue expenditure of the company, we're doing about 160 to 180 crore R&D spend a year right now, and we are filing about almost close to 25 ANDAs in the US market. That's almost like very simply $1 million spent per product. As now you're changing business model more towards your own filings, not doing partner filings, do you think that in 2-3 years, this 180 crore can become a 400 crore R&D number for you? I'm not talking about as a personal suite. I'm just talking as you file more complex product, etc. Do you see a step jump in this R&D becoming 2x in 2 years or 3 years?
So we've been filing our own products since, I would say, last 3 years, not just now. So if you look at our initial percentages, with the lower base, the percentage was same, but the absolute number was lower than what we're doing for last 2-3 years. So we don't think that will increase that much. Even for the complex products, you know, we always collaborate with our partners. So they do pitch in some of the studies they do up. So we don't anticipate that to go that high. So we still keep that as a percentage of the rate, around 4%.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sudarshan Padmanabhan from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the question.
Mr. Padmanabhan, if you can speak closer to the device, please. Your audio is not audible.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah. My question, you know, is to understand the extent of, you know, shortage. I mean, we've been hearing the shortage from the third quarter to the fourth quarter and, you know, seeing, a significant part in the first quarter. Now that, you know, we are into the second quarter, I mean, in terms of intensity, how do we see things easing up, say, from the second quarter? And when we are talking about, say, the second half to kind of normalize, what gives us that kind of a confidence in that kind of commentary?
So while the syringes is a major impact which has happened, there are also issues around 4 or 5 products where we have filed alternative tubing or filters with FDA. So we also lost some productivity on that, about 16 to 18 productivity days across sites and across lines. So that kind of sorted out. Syringes, we have seen some quantities coming at the end of the quarter. So that's why we're able to cater to the US market, which without impact, still it could probably impact was about 20-25 crores. and we have delivery schedules from BD for this quarter as well. So looking at that, I think we are more comfortable on the syringe side. The heparin product is getting impacted with stoppers from West. That's still we have not got the resolution yet. You know, that has impacted about 40-50 crores. So we are working around alternative stopper for that. So we see that that's the only risk, about 40-50 crores of heparin which couldn't supply. We don't have a solution for that yet, which we are working with West for alternate supplies. But otherwise, we are good with other components.
Okay. Okay. So I think barring the 50 crores a year, I think you are saying that most of the issues are sorted and that should come in the second half.
Yeah. So it's not 50 crores per year. I'm saying the quarter 50 crores was lost. So that's what we are now trying to see an alternative stopper. But the schedule we got from West is in November, but we wanted that actually, the last quarter and at least push to this quarter. So that will help. But the schedule we got is in November.
Sure. And my second question is on the, demand side specifically. I mean, you don't share the order book and, towards that. But when I look at, say, the US business or the ROW business specifically, with respect to number one, the newer customers and existing customers increasing the wallet in terms of volumes. And, whatever that we have missed, because if you look at the ROW, we've lost about, 100-120 odd crores. I mean, is this sales recuperable, say, in the next 9 months? So would this 120 crores be added, say, in the second quarter or the third quarter, in addition to the typical 230-220 crores kind of a run rate that you do?
With the capacity constraint, I don't know whether we can recover everything what we lost in this quarter. But at least the growth what we told in our normal business that couldn't be maintained. But what we lost about 250 crores or 300 crores odd crores this quarter, it could be difficult to recover 100% of that.
Okay, and in terms of the demand, as far as volumes, I mean, whether are we seeing a increase in the volumes on a year-on-year basis, as far as the demand is concerned, across ROW and the developed markets?
Yeah, the demand is there. If you really, go by molecule-wise, right? I mean, Enoxa, we almost, from quarter-on-quarter basis, we almost like three times we sold in the first quarter. Last quarter is about 47 crores in the U.S. We did almost 160 crores this quarter. The demand was there. Same like Petrolag is almost like 90% growth. Like six or seven molecules which have grown almost 90%, 100%, 200% like that. So that way, we don't see demand dropping off. But pre-COVID, so there are some products which are doing prior to COVID, which has not really, the total market has not come back. Vanco was one of our top five products. Right? I mean, if you look at the total market, 30-35% market has never come back. And what we hear from the market is more people moving to RTUs because of the compounding business, issues with the labor force and all that. So there are some issues with the older products, but there are a lot of other products which are actually extremely well compared to others.
Okay. And one last thing, earlier we have been talking about the 18-20% kind of a growth. Would this year, be a kind of given that the first quarter is pretty bad and we are seeing a recovery in the second half, so what is something that you are looking at and, would this year be significantly lower and probably FY24 and FY25 should be relatively better? Any color on that?
Yeah, so, if you can just forget one quarter, then probably the growth will be stronger. But if you include this quarter, because it's difficult to recover what is lost in this quarter to 100%. So it could be a lower growth year. But moving forward with the demand, what we're seeing and, the growth, what we have even shown for a lot of the other products other than where we face shortages, we're still confident that we could maintain the growth what we told before in the next 2 years.
Okay. Sure. Thanks a lot, Ajay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Neha Manpuria from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. Just on the China business, I think in the presentation you've mentioned that our facility inspection has been waived off. So when do we expect to start seeing revenues from China come through, and what's the filing that we expect from China over the next year?
So for two products, they are in a clearance phase, and they confirmed that there's no need of inspection. So something should come by, the third or the fourth quarter. That's what we are anticipating. And five products getting filed in FY23, and then another 6 to 7 products in FY24.
Got it. And in terms of margins for the full year, now that given your commentary that supply chain would issues would partly get resolved in the second half, the mix should improve. How should we look at the margin in light of the higher cost, and this is X other income, margins X other income. Would it be similar to what we have done in the current quarter?
Yeah, it should be around that range. Yeah, I would say so.
And going forward, sir, what would drive this margins higher? Given the uncertainty in the cost environment, how much of that would be dependent on the new launches coming through versus existing product team growth?
So once we start getting some complex product approvals, that those are higher margin products, so we should be able to get the increase in margins. And also once we start leveraging more lines in this facility, we just added 3 or 4 new lines which we need to start manufacturing. Like I said, the fixed costs are there already, so this will start adding to the additional margins for the coming years.
Okay, so what would be the guidance then for let's say the next 2 years in terms of margin?
Margin guidance.
I would say some 33% to 35% maybe.
Understood. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Damesha from Macquarie Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my question. So first question on the biologics business, we have shared that, we have got 4 visits. But typically what's the, process, let's say from site visit to actual contracting, what are the steps? And the visits that we are getting from clients, are those new clients for us or, some of the existing clients, but they're, biosimilar division or biologics division visiting us. So how should we think about that?
So three are new customers, and one is the known customer with a different division. And typically it varies from all the 4 clients. If you are looking at transferring the technology and looking at making clinical batches, the other is looking at doing more analytical development for they have done. One client is looking at taking a line for like 2 months, and putting up their own some of their people for the technology transfer. So it depends on who the customer is, but it's at various kinds of discussions happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Secondly, in terms of, I think, just clarity on the earlier participant's question on the margin, you said, FY24, 25, or 23 beyond, we are targeting 33 to 35% range. So is this, what do you say, is this including other income, or is the like-to-like, without other income, just core operating profit that we are targeting?
So hopefully, the other income, if you really look at today, it's part of it is on interest and the other is operational income. And if you can utilize this to get a good asset, this will go down, if you can acquire a good profitable asset. So on overall basis, other than the other income, we're looking at 33%, 35%.
Sure. And on the, acquiring the assets, what's the priority now? I think at some point the priority was complex products followed by some backward integration. Is it the same, or has anything changed on that side?
I mean, we are looking at, you know, I mean, ultimately we don't go one by one, you know. It's a three of options we're looking at. Whichever asset we find, we have to go after it, because all these are important for either for profitability or for growth of the business. So it's not like one, it's not a sequential thing. So we look everything at the same time, and whenever we get an opportunity, we try to look at it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mayur Patel from IIFL AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Most of the questions got answered. But on the margins side, 31.5% core EBITDA margins, which you managed to, in this tough environment, to maintain at least QOQ. Should we see that the worst is behind, you know, from the margins perspective, or this API-related pressure and this syringe-related disruption can lead to some more downside in the short term before it starts moving up to your desired 33% plus levels?
I would say, you know, it's one of the toughest quarters in terms of everything, right? I mean, the costs of utilities are high. You know, power shortages in our states are very high, so we have to use utilities for that. And then, you know, we have to airlift a lot of goods too because of the shortages of materials. So that has been absorbed. So I would say, you know, the worst things have already happened. And I think, you know, hopefully if some of these comes back to normal, the margins should only improve.
So just one more question, if I can. You very, you know, you nicely explained about all the problems across markets, mostly supply chain driven. So earlier, ROW market was growing at a very sharp, very significantly higher rate than the other markets, which was also helping us to report, you know, very 18-20% kind of growth, or even more in some of the quarters. So had, except for the supply chain issues on the demand side, so whenever the syringe supply normalizes, the ROW can come back to that same high growth rate, in your view?
Yeah, so we have clear visibility on ROW because most of the, you know, tenders are won for a couple of years. So we know, you know, how the order books look like. It's mostly, you know, the supply constraints what we have in order to supply. So that way we're not too concerned about the growth on the ROW. It's more to do with how much we can supply.
And you were expecting around September or so the syringe supply would normalize. What is the expectation currently?
I think it's the same thing, right? I mean, while we are also qualifying other syringes for other markets, but even with BD, this quarter we should be good enough, you know, to normalize the supplies. At least, you know, if you look at from April perspective, today we are better off in one way. We are able to cater to most of the US needs, except maybe a couple of million syringes. But this quarter, we should be able to cater to the demand.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Thavkar from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So we have guided for launching 7 products in the US, say, over the next 3 quarters. So which has an addressable market of around $1.3 billion. So what's our take there? Are we still on it?
Give me a second. Yeah, yes, we are actually, you know, we have approval for 3 products which are planned to be launched, and the rest, you know, we have a goal dates of, I think, next month. So, you know, we should be able to launch most of it, yes.
Okay, fair enough. And so, like, this other participant and I had this question on biosimilars. So while we understand that, you know, 3 to 4 clients you are in active discussion with, but some timelines as to when can we see that first dollar revenue coming in, broadly, roughly in your expectations versus where you are engaged with your client currently. You know, some flavor on that part would really be helpful.
Because we are actually not, meaningfully adding to near-term numbers for this. But at least the first dollars, hopefully we are trying to get in the last quarter of this year, if this discussion, everything goes well.
Okay. And typically, you would say about the, anything to say about the tenure of the contract, the duration, where you would like to begin with?
So, see, what happens with this is initially, people want to test waters, right? I mean, these are all new businesses we are entering, new technology we are entering. So, they would like to give us smaller contracts for a year or so, or it could be a project-based thing, And some of these gets converted to commercial scale after they do the clinicals and, they come back to us for basic clinical batches and stuff like that. So, once they start up, normally, once they started taking batches here, of course, they have to continue till the product reaches a conclusion, right? So that's how all these contracts remain.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have any follow-up, may we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Tushar Manudhane from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. So just on this biologics again, so how much would be the operational cost already into the P&L related to this biologics?
Give me a second, Tushar.
So 15 crores to share for this quarter.
So broadly 15 crores per quarter would be there 100 at least for next 1 to 2 years and fully reflected.
Sorry, your voice was not clear. Can you repeat?
So 15 crores as a normal quarterly run rate to consider for biology at least for next 1 to 2 years?
Yeah. So we are already all manpower all is there, the team is full there, so this will be there.
Got you. And sir, would we, because of this constraints on account of syringes, how much of the, or would there be any penalty on account of delay or failure to supply, or that is taken care of despite shortage of ancillary materials?
No, that's why, so the priority was given to US and normally penalties exist, so there we don't, we're not losing anything. But other markets, we are not catering because of the shortage issue. So domestic and other markets, there's no problem.
Okay, just one more. Typically, these syringes or even the stoppers, we would be having a long-term contract, right? Because irrespective of the product, these materials would be any which was required. So what is it that went wrong, or this is more like a phenomenon which have been faced by the other companies as well, and how do we take care that this doesn't repeat going forward?
So we do have contracts for syringes, but always, it's because it's a single supplier, especially for the US, it also linked to the safety device. So it has to be a discussion with the supplier how to manage it. But it's not like, one stopper fits all, right? There's hundreds of different stoppers depending on which product, which stopper is compatible with which product. So the R&D decides which stopper to use. So it's not that all stoppers are under shortage. And if you're supplying 150 products, there are only like 5 or 6 stoppers which are getting into this issue. So it's not like it's a problem with all the stoppers. But syringes, unfortunately, there are very few players, and especially in the U.S., very few approved suppliers. And also because we need to put a safety device for this, and it's a combination product. So we can't change the syringe without the device being changed, and there's only one device. That's the restriction we have.
Sorry if I'm dragging a little, but just one last question on this aspect. So, given that there are limited number of suppliers for such kind of materials, they would also have their order book kind of filled already from the other global players. So even if we get into contract today, what could be the lead time to get the material in place?
No, we already have a contract with them, Tushar. We already have a contract with them for almost 50 million syringes per year, but still they are not able to supply it. So it's more to do with how much is the demand and how much they have. And they have also added new capacities, which they're saying they're going to get online by September or so. So the overall demand across the globe has gone up in last couple of years, and that's why the constraint is. So I would say they are more, I think they're giving us as a ratio of how much orders versus how much they can supply, and that's been the case. But I think that is getting resolved now, now that there's a gap of almost 6 to 7 months where they didn't supply much.
Got it. Got it. That's it. Any COVID-related sales in 4Q?
Sir, sorry to interrupt, but for any follow-up questions, may we request you to rejoin the queue, please. We have other participants waiting in the queue. A reminder to the participants, please limit your questions to two per participant. The next question is from the line of Saion Mukherjee from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Sir, on the partnership, typically for the products that you have launched in the recent past, let's say over the last, you know, 2 years or so in the U.S., typically how many partners you sell the product in the U.S. market? And are these like exclusive contracts or more of them are non-exclusive in nature?
Some products are exclusive, and some are semi-exclusive, I would say. So especially the big products or wherever there is a patent litigation or some BE study need to be done, there it will be exclusive because they also pitch in with the upfront costs. But otherwise, normally we either will give semi-exclusive, or even if we give exclusive, then we'll have a clause if they don't get hit a percentage of market share, then it becomes semi-exclusive.
Okay. So on an average, would you say, so far for the less complex products, you would have multiple players, right? So would that be like two, three players, or typically, like how many players you generally have a contract with? For relative.
Normally we do with two people. But if they're not performing, then we go and give for the third person or so.
Okay.
Because we, not only our product, we also, you know, sometimes get the same product for tech transfer wise and other model. So ultimately, the product which we are manufacturing might be for three or four players.
Right. So in the past, I think you had see long-term contracts for bulk, you know, for a large number of ANDAs for with Athenex, with Fosun, etc. So do you, like, have you signed any such large contracts which you can disclose in the recent past, either for the U.S. or maybe for the non-U.S. markets?
You mean a set of products?
Yeah.
Not as a set of products, but, you know, two, three products, you know, like a bunch of three products at a time. That's how we signed. But not like 15 products, 17 products like that, no. Normally we do that when a new company starts their own business, when they're looking at a portfolio. And so where they also look at some old products also where we have option to give them. But for the companies are already there, they normally look at two products, three products, depending on the portfolio what we have. So we sign up like three products at a time or two products at a time or one product at a time. But as a portfolio like Athenex also, when they started the company, that's when we have signed up. Likewise, Xiromed, when they started the company, we have signed up a portfolio of products. Same like Alvogen, you know, these are all like newly formed entities where we have helped them with the portfolio.
Yeah, so yeah, that's what I was referring to. So you like these bulk contracts, you didn't have any in the recent past?
No.
Okay. And so just one bookkeeping. I know you've given the inventory days, receivable and payable. Is it possible to sort of mention that in rupees million? At least the inventory and receivable numbers as of end of
I don't have it right now with me. But I can give you offline. You can also back calculate it based on the sales. So the method of format is given in the presentation. But we'll give it to you offline.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good is part, you mentioned, you know, the employees in the sales.
Mr. Agarwal, sorry to interrupt, but your voice is breaking up. May we request you to move to a better reception area, please?
Is this better?
Yes, sir. Please proceed.
Okay. The cost.
But your voice is breaking up once again, sir.
Trying again. Because of addition of employees, it has been higher. What about other expenses? I missed that part. So other expenses on substantially higher despite lower revenues. So are these operating costs and here to stay? And how do we think about it? Or is it due to escalation of freight, etc., which is coming down now and lower?
Other expenses for this quarter is 808 million rupees. March was 899. So this quarter it has come down actually. And last year June was 783. So it's about 3% up actually. Not so much. Only power and fuel has gone up substantially.
Also come down, right? So the reference was percentage to sales.
Yeah, so see, most of our cost is fixed in injectable facility, so it will not so much vary, especially the other expense with, in relation. That's why we have a leverage effect whenever our sales go up or down.
Okay. Trying to understand.
Sorry to interrupt one second, but your voice is breaking up. One second, sir.
Okay, is that better?
Yes.
Okay, in terms of timing for qualifying from other injectable, you know, syringes players, so I heard saying that, you know, US is largely in place with BD and you're trying to qualify others with respect to ROW market. So how long does this qualification take? Because you mentioned some normalization from next quarter. So reference was the upcoming quarter or the current quarter?
The current quarter for domestic and some of the rest of the world markets, you know, it's because it's a glass syringe, so you don't take much time. You can quickly replace it. But some markets like Brazil or Saudi were more regulated. There we need to submit the data, and that might take 3 to 4 months.
Okay. And lastly, on the specification, 2 years.
We're losing you. We're losing you.
So seems like we lost the connection for the current participant. We move to the next question from the line of Samir Paisiwala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you and good evening, everyone. So can you talk a bit about the pricing pressure in the US that you mentioned, and especially in the context that I thought that your partnerships in your business model is fair bit in, you know, sort of insulated from the end market competition.
So the impact of price for us, I think, is about 1%. So it's not much, and you know that's been the case over the years. Either there's no impact or you know 1% or something. So there's not much impact for us on that front.
So how does it percolate down to your P&L? Is it through profit share or how does it work?
Yeah, it's through profit share, yes.
Okay. So I'm just wondering if the end market product pricing, say, falls 10 or 15%, would the impact not be much bigger for you?
Because overall revenue-wise, it's only about 10% for us. So even that fall won't impact much.
Okay, exactly. So that was a question that if you are having 1% impact, what does it mean for the end market pricing? So that would be about 10%, right? It's 1 to 10, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, that's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rakesh Naidu from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, my question is to Sadhu sir. Sir, until about few weeks back, We were guiding about a high teen kind of growth trajectory overall. What exactly has changed in few weeks that says we are looking at these kind of numbers? That is number one. And second question is, you talked about disruption-led sales loss of around 250 crores, of which the COVID impact seems to be around 150 odd crores. So should we, I mean, when we build numbers, take additional 400 crores off the estimates for FY23? I mean, is it a fair way to look at it?
Rakesh, can you just repeat the question again? We are both the questions, can you just split and come back again?
Sumanta, I mean, my question is, I mean, until about few weeks back, because of silent period, we were guiding for high teen kind of growth trajectory overall. I mean, what essentially has happened that we are seeing such a stark contraction in the numbers overall across all the segments? What exactly is that we have missed out?
See, one is, what we anticipated to get delivered, got delivered late in the quarter. You know, we were anticipating to get these ranges delivered the beginning of June, end of May, and it got shifted to third week of June. So that is a big impact. That's when, about 6 to 7 million syringes couldn't get delivered. So that got shifted. But from line shutdown perspective, it was there even prior to this quarter. So that was a planned one. But we were probably discussing over the entire year, not for the particular quarter, but that impact was there just because of the delay of supplies.
And sir, I mean, to understand it very clearly, this syringes issue, is it for the U.S. market? I mean, in the last call, you had alluded to the shortage being in for the U.S. market. And now you're telling that the same shortage issue is there in the Indian market as well. And then obviously, the cost dynamics have changed. How should we actually look at this? I mean, should we expect a resolution of this in the current quarter or in an immediate foreseeable future, or something which will take some more time?
So the syringes are used for, not just U.S. market. The syringes are used for U.S., some of the CRE-regulated markets in other markets also, right, other than the domestic and also other markets, where we can't replace the syringes overnight. So we have actually supplied most of our U.S. demand with what we got. The impact for the U.S. was lesser, probably 20-25 crores was impact for the U.S. But the impact was larger in other markets where we couldn't supply because of shortage. So there's no different thing going on. So that way, there's no separate set of syringes what we get for the Indian market or for the US market. Now, Indian market, we can use other syringes, but we also need to see, because we have a contract, for 50 million, we have better pricing. If you go and buy from others, there's a little higher cost. And with the added logistic cost increase, with the dollar fluctuating, the margin profile was not helping us to sell in Indian market. That's why we stayed away from selling in Indian market with other syringes.
Okay. And so what component of these 250 crores lost sales in this quarter is COVID related?
So you're asking whether you'd compare with last year first quarter? That's what it is?
Yes, sir.
So last year first quarter, like I said, Indian sales last year was 180 crores, out of which 80 crores was COVID related, where, we made Remdesivir and additional Enoxa. So that's 80 crores from Indian market, yeah.
So that segment would continue to see a similar kind of trajectory over the rest of the current fiscal, right?
Yeah, correct. That's gone. Yeah, correct. That's like a one-time surge.
So, sir, I mean, then help me understand your earlier guidance. I mean, how are we confident that, I mean, even if you exclude this quarter as a one-off, how are we confident that we'll be able to do high-teen kind of growth for FY23? I mean, I'm also looking from the context of what Hepalink and Nanjing King is talking in terms of how they're going to ramp up their production in enoxaparin and other products. So how should we actually be looking at your guidance for FY23 now?
So if you look at our last year sales to this year, our Enoxa itself in the US is additional revenue, we're getting around 300 crores, right? I mean, last year, entire year for the US, we did about 250? About 250 crores. Now this year the run rate is around 160 crores per quarter. So it's almost like 620 crores. So there itself, we have a big surge in the numbers for that product.
And you are confident of maintaining the market share in the second half as well, right? Because the dynamics could change in the second half.
No, these are all contracted, right? I mean, that's why, we've been maintained. This contract was there for many, couple of years, and till we got enough syringes, we didn't move to that contract. And that's why we have to start supplying in this quarter, compromising on the local supplies.
Okay, and there won't be any penalty hits for not being able to deliver the earlier supplies.
No, so if you know the history, the partner already had this contract for a few years and was taking from the innovator, and we had an agreement to move that contract to us because we licensed our product we didn't have approval. So when he took that from the innovator, then we gave him the right to license that product till we get our product approval, and so he got that contract. So there was a time limitation on that. So it's just more to do with us giving him the right to take the product from the innovator as an AG.
Okay, thank you, sir. I joined the line.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Alankar Garude from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. My first question is, can you help us understand what percentage of your IP-led and tech transfer contracts have a profit share built into the agreement? And does this differ across markets?
So this profit share model is only for the US market, not for other markets. And our own IP-led products, the profit share might range from 40 to 50%. Whereas the tech transfer models is more on royalty, where we have about 5% royalty on net sales, that kind of model.
Okay, so basically no profit share as far as the tech transfer model is concerned.
Yeah, correct.
Fair enough. And secondly, sir, so we have seen some selling by key personnel, including you, Mr. Sadhu, in the last couple of months. Can you please help us understand the reasons for now completely selling of your stake in the company?
Well, these are all stock options which the employees got 3 years ago, and it's on tranches. And as you know, the taxation won't help you to keep long, right? You have to pay a perquisite tax and you have to pay excise price. So there's a substantial amounts of money where we have to pay upfront. So if you don't pay that, then you have to pay the interest on that. So that's one of the reasons why employees have sold off.
Understood. So I thought actually the tax obligation would be a small proportion of the overall ownership, but that was not
really because
okay.
Not really, because you have to see at what price people have exercised it. And you have to pay an exercise price plus the price at which it is exercised minus the price at which it got
awarded.
And on that you have to pay a perquisite tax, which for many people it could be 35-40%. So you'll end up almost 60% of, 50-60% of the price. So that's a substantial amount. And if you wait for long, that then there's no meaning in actually people getting any money, because then they have to pay interest on the loans they take to get this right.
Understood.
And also internally, we also have an understanding that people should not trade stocks and all that. So people can't, actually employees cannot buy and sell. So we also have that policy just as a good corporate governance. We don't want that issue.
Understood. And maybe one final question from my side. If I look at Fosun specifically, $40 billion of debt, and there have been some concerns of late on cash flows. So is there any change at all as to how Fosun is strategically looking at Gland as an investment?
So not that we are aware of anything. Fosun is a strategic investment for them. And Gland is like a injectable platform globally for Fosun. So it remains same. And Fosun Pharma is also listed in a separate company. And our parent is Fosun Pharma, direct holding, and the board members are from Fosun Pharma nominated. And there is no also any impact as a Gland as an independent company to perform business-wise or financially-wise, because there is no interdependence on the business side, or the, you know, there is no financially dependence on Fosun or any intercompany, any deposit. So it's a Gland as an all will continue to operate like it was doing earlier. But that's what we are. Yeah.
Sure, sir. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, we take that as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Sumanta Bajpai for closing comments.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Stephen, and thank you all the participants for joining us today for our first quarter earnings call. If any questions still remain unanswered, please feel free to reach out to us. Thanks, and looking forward to interact with you again in our second quarter's earnings call. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Gland Pharma Limited, that concludes this conference. We thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.